seated. Good afternoon. We welcome you all for our third case today. And I'll call 09AP608, John Adams versus State of Wisconsin. And the lineup that I have is 12 and a half minutes for Attorney Glenn Reynolds, representing the town of Magnolia. 12 and a half minutes for Krista Westerberg, representing John Adams et al. 25 minutes for Eric M. McLeod, representing the Larson Acres, Inc. 5 minutes for Robert Hunter, Assistant Attorney General, representing State of Wisconsin Livestock Facilities Siting Review Board. 2.5 minutes rebuttal for Mr. Reynolds and 2.5 minutes rebuttal for Ms. Westerberg. Right? Okay. Mm-hmm. We'll proceed. Mr. Reynolds.
Thank you, Chief Justice, members of the court. My name is Glenn Reynolds, and along with Rebecca Paulson, my associate, I represent the town of Magnolia, who found itself in this case in the eye of a storm, attempting to balance three legislative mandates. One, to protect health and safety through the use of its zoning power and its zoning land use authority. Two, to act as a partner with the Department of Natural Resources to protect drinking water and surface water. And three, and most recently, now to accommodate a new legislative priority to site large livestock facilities in the countryside. In the end, I believe the town balanced these three legislative priorities, and no one was happy. The citizens would have probably preferred not to have any livestock facility or manure lagoons in their neighborhood, and Mr. Larson would have preferred not to have any oversight, especially local oversight. But the purpose of the statute was not to eradicate local authority. In fact, the statute's purpose emphasizes these three legislative themes. Number one, when the Department of Agriculture was instructed what rule to give, the first priority was make a rule that's protective of health and safety. Two, the legislature required the department to balance the local community concerns, the viability of livestock operations, as well as protecting natural resources. I'm sorry?
What are you citing for authority for that?
That's in, Chief Justice, that's in 9390 paren 2, Department Duties B, the obligations of promulgating the rule. In essence, the Court of Appeals error, and the reason we're asking, the town is asking for this court to reverse the Court of Appeals, is that they considered the livestock siting law in a vacuum. And instead of trying to incorporate the purpose of the livestock siting law, which was to pave the way for a new form of agriculture, they basically concluded that local authority to protect health and safety, to preserve drinking water, and to protect surface water was eradicated. But that is not how, when you look at the big picture of towns' roles, which has been upheld time and time and again, if the actions are reasonable, with balancing all of these interests, Mr. Larson's desire to farm with the citizens' desire to have pure and clean water. The Court of Appeals decision...
You buy the approach taken by the Court of Appeals, their approach is one of preemption. And preemption certainly would lead to uniform standards and uniform conditions throughout the state of Wisconsin. Isn't that desirable?
That is desirable. And in fact, uniformity is, in fact, what happened. But it was the uniformity for licensing of these large factory farms. So what the legislature was saying to towns, who have the responsibility to protect citizens, look, your authority to say no is gone. But we are going to make sure that these are cited with uniform criteria for how they are operated. But here's the gaping hole in that uniformity. The factory farms are cited uniformly. They have to use a variety of standards to protect health and safety. And the most important standard at issue here is NRCS 590, nutrient management. And what NRCS 590 says, Justice Crooks, is that uses of this standard, you can use it and complete it, but it doesn't guarantee that there won't be violations of law, and in that case, the violation of water quality standards. So in other words, the licensing of the facility does not correspond with the huge diversity of topography in this state. We have wetlands, we have organic soils, we have high water tables and low. And in this case, the reason the town of Magnolia decided to accept the standards for siting and licensing was because they have a vulnerable landscape. In this case, Larson is farming on organic, porous soils with glacial outwash plains, sand and gravel as substrate, and tie lines. These are perforated pipes leading from a drained wetland directly into Norwegian Creek. So when Larson uses NRCS 590 and it rains, it's likely, and the town has actually proven through its evidence, to pollute local surface waters, and the same with groundwater. So what I think the legislature envisioned was uniformity for how these places are sited, but to allow authority for local governments who know the landscape better, who know the water resources better, to decide whether there are specific conditions which should be in place to assure that the public health and safety is protected.
And where do you get the concept that localities should decide specific matters?
I'm sorry.
Do you get the concept? What's your authority for saying that the statute allows the authority to regulate?
Well, essentially, it is this dichotomy of licensing and regulation that is within the statute, Chief Justice.
Where?
Well, it basically says local governments, if you want a seat at the table, you have to adopt the licensing criteria. That means that they're going to come in and they're going to have to abide by technical standards.
And what's the statute for that?
That's in 9380, Chief Justice. But it also says that local governments are entitled to issue conditional use permits.
Okay.
And this is basically how technical standards of how farms operate and the performance standards protecting water quality come together with local control. Because when the town adopted the standards for licensing, it incorporated those standards into its ordinance, but that ordinance had one protective measure and treated all conditional use permittees the same. It said, you can operate in this town, but you must not pollute ground and surface water, you must not create a nuisance, and you must abide by the minimum standards set by the state for surface water quality and groundwater quality. So what the legislature...
Talking, Councillor, about which ordinance passed on which date. What are you referring to?
Well, there are two ordinances at issue, Justice Rogensack. One is the one in 1977.
Right.
And in that it had, I believe the number was 12.1, that had essentially the same conditions as the ordinance passed in May of 2006. And these both...
Well, 2006, I think, is quite different. I have them both written here before me. The only DNR standard that is set out in the 1977 ordinance is Chapter NR-102.
That's correct.
When you get to the ordinance passed May 25th, 2006, if that's the other one you're referring to, it has a number of NR standards or chapters, 102, 140, 141, and 809. And the reason I ask you which one you're referring to is there is a concern about which one you can apply to this particular permit, not permits in the future, but the permit that's before us today. So I need you to tell me, are you applying both? And if you are, then I have some other questions on that.
Well, yes, I think both do apply. But most importantly, that provision that sets an overall condition for all conditional use permits under this zoning permit has a police power provision that says no degradation of groundwater, no nuisances, and then adopt state standards. So it is true that initially there were no groundwater standards in 1977, and then in 2006, in order to better define groundwater pollution and put scientific parameters on it, the town adopted the groundwater standards. So that is true. But it really didn't change anything because the groundwater standards were just another way of interpreting degradation of drinking water. So it was just basically putting a scientific parameter. Because overall what the town attempted to do here is bring science into this, into the laboratory of government.
I can understand that, and you're relying more in 2006 on the DNR, which is charged by the state with looking after groundwater and so forth. So I understand what you were trying to do. The permit here was filed, according to my notes, on May 2nd, 2006.
That's correct.
The second ordinance we're looking at was passed on May 25th, 2006.
Correct.
Now, as I read the regulations and the statutes, in order to pass something that is more strict than, it has to be passed by the town before the permit was filed. So how do you get around the fact you've got a permit filed in early May and you've got an ordinance passed later in May?
Two things. I'd have two responses to that. One is that this standard of performance is not a more stringent standard under licensing criteria. It measures whether the technical standards that are the farmers required to work with actually succeed in protecting health and safety. This is how water law works in Wisconsin and throughout the nation. There is an anticipated discharge, but if the discharge exceeds a performance or water quality standards, then the water quality standards take preeminence and the activity must cease. So in essence, what the town did is just adopt the groundwater standard to specify what groundwater pollution meant. But another point, Justice Rugensack, is that the application, because of the farmer Larson's reluctance to share information with the town, the application was not complete until November of 2006.
Well, he didn't add anything to it, although the town grumbled, saying the application wasn't sufficient. He added not one thing to it.
He actually did. He was refusing to give the town anything more than a checklist, which basically, according to DATCAP standards, would have sufficed to presume that his application was complete. But here is the wrinkle on this particular case. If Larson had not had a facility, if he hadn't been in operation for a couple of years, the town probably would have said, you go ahead and build your facility, subject to non-pollution, non-degradation, monitoring. But the town had had experience with Larson, and they had information that suggested that pollution was occurring. And so they asked Larson for more information, and he refused to give it. And ultimately, the Department of Agriculture got involved and said, give it to them. And when they did, they considered the application complete.
Now, but just if I can finish up on this.
Oh, sure.
It was my understanding from the briefing, and perhaps I've not interpreted them correctly, but it was my understanding that what was given was not anything that was required in the application. So he didn't change his application at all under the standards set out by the statute and the rules for what you have to put in an application. Is that right or not?
Well, that's correct. But the town differed with whether a single checklist, that's one page,
right,
for this enormous obligation of the town to consider,
right,
rather than what is happening on this farm now, what kind of manure strategies do you have, give us your nutrient management plan. That was it. Let us have your plan. And they refused to give that, which the town then could not make a decision as to whether the resources that they were obligated to protect were in fact being protected.
I see. Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Chief, can I ask a question?
Justice Bradley.
Earlier in the questioning, when the Chief Justice asked you, where do you get this local control authority, and you responded, one of the arguments that's set forth in your brief on page 31 and 32 deal with 92.15.2. This is the bottom of 31, and I didn't see this argument in a lot of other places. And you say the citing law never mentions WSSTAT 92.15.2, which explicitly permits the town to enact regulation of livestock operations that are consistent with performance standards or water quality standards under the 2081.16.3. And then you set forth the Court of Appeals opinion on preemption and take it to task. Tell me more about this 92.15 sub 2 argument that you advance on these two pages. It seems like you're saying that this statute provides local governments can enact regulations that are consistent with the DNR standards under this sub 2.
Yes, Justice Bradley, I think they are. When you read the statute, it basically uses this notwithstanding language. And basically, what it is doing is telling local communities, which have...
Okay, I'll tell you what, we all think differently and approach things differently. I need to know numbers. I need to know what statute you're talking about. I need to know words of the statute, because that's our job, to interpret the statute, interpret the regs. So if you can kind of put those in when you're just...
Yes, absolutely. The language in 9390 basically says, notwithstanding...
That's subsection 3.
I was talking about 9215 sub 2.
Right, but 9215 is mentioned in the notwithstanding language and says,
right,
in spite of that, you cannot stop these things from going in. But it doesn't say that you can't set conditions that are necessary, consistent with 9215. In other words, if a town which has a better understanding of local conditions and water, they realize, as Magnolia did, that this area is susceptible to pollution, 9215 does give them regulatory authority consistent with its ordinance to set reasonable conditions for the purpose of protecting health and safety. And in the end, this is totally consistent with the partnership idea and is totally consistent with non-preemption, where the towns and the state work together for the common good. In this case, Larson has a permit. He is operating. The only problem is that the town isn't able to basically fulfill its role to even monitor water quality or to know what's going on. Thank you.
Well, I just have I have some problems reading the statute. They're very hard to read. The statute you cited as to the notwithstanding language is 93 sub 3. 93.90 sub 3. And that's notwithstanding. And it makes reference to 92.15.3a. So, you know, there's a fight going on about what notwithstanding means.
That's right.
In spite of, or in addition to, or other words, all of which could be supported in case law in different statutes. But 2 says, notwithstanding 92.11 and 92.17, local government may enact regulations of livestock operations that are consistent with and do not exceed the performance standards, prohibitions, conservation practices, and technical standards under 281.16.3. What's 281.16.3?
That is basically discharge regulations. In other words, is exactly what we're talking about, the agricultural runoff into surface and groundwater.
Okay, so 9215 authorizes, you say, the government unit to enact regulations.
Correct.
Right. And you think those are the regulations that they're using for their conditional use permit here?
Well, they're using the zoning authority under Chapter 60.
I understand that.
But I think 9215 certainly gives them the authority to pay attention to what's going on and to be the local participants in protecting our water quality resources.
What are the usual use requirements in a conditional use permit?
Well, usually the use requirements are focused on local conditions that cause a threat.
Water. Is that standard?
Well, for something like this, Chief Justice Abrahamson, where you have essentially the compilation of 100 normal dairy farms in one place with the equivalent of hundreds of thousands of people of the city, water is the issue. Water is the only issue in this case. Balancing that concentration of manure and its placement on local soil because it basically pollutes water. And some circumstances pollutes water more in some places than others. So the local control and the local conditions are based upon reasonable assessments that are necessary to protect health and safety. And that's what the town did in this case.
Do they have regulations outside the conditional use permit?
This is the only regulation that they have. This is their only key to protecting water quality.
Sub 2 refers to regulations.
That's right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Westerberg.
Thank you. May it please the Court, I am Krista Westerberg with McGillivray Westerberg and Bender. And with Peter McKeever, I represent John and Linda Adams and the six other individually named petitioners in this matter. My clients are landowners and farmers and residents within 2 miles of Larson Acres Heifer facility. I want to pick up where Mr. Reynolds left off talking about Chapter 281. And Chapter 281 is a statute we've emphasized in our briefs because it states that all levels of government have to be mobilized, federal, state, and local, in order to protect water quality and get the best results for the citizens of the state. That is also not a statute that is included in the notwithstanding provision of 93.93A. And that's one reason we believe it's inherent in the livestock siting law that local governments still have authority to impose conditions on permits that are necessary to protect water quality.
Does 281.16 deal with water quality?
Yes, it does. It deals with agricultural runoff. And obviously runoff
is part of water quality,
yes,
but it's just one part of the equation for water equality. It's just part of it. I mean, it's a segment of an issue of water quality.
It is, and it is probably one of the bigger segments of the issues of water quality because runoff from fields where manure is applied is a source of water pollution and is a concern, especially to residents around Larson Acres who are drinking the water, the groundwater, and are using the surface water. One thing I like about that statute is it says it is concerned with making sure state, federal, and local governments act together to accomplish the greatest results for people of the state, and it's to be liberally construed to that end. It's not to ensure that everybody stays inside of their bureaucratic boxes. It's to ensure that we get results. NR-151 is also promulgated pursuant to that statute, and the Counties and Towns Association amicus brief really discusses the interaction of all of these water quality statutes well and what the towns have to do under those statutes and under this water quality protection regulatory regime.
It says under B, 3B, that the DNR consults with the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection and promulgate rules prescribing performance standards. Has the Department of Agriculture promulgated those rules?
They have done their share, yes. That's in the Administrative Code at Chapter ATCP 50. Mm-hmm. So the DNR's role in all of this is to promulgate water quality standards and performance standards, and then DATC swoops in and says, here are some best management practices and how you're going to get there.
How does that affect the siting board?
I don't think at all, because especially in this case where the siting law and the legislature specifically directed or gave the Department of Agriculture the option to cross-reference all of these water quality protection laws when it created the siting standards in its administrative code. And it's not disputed that the Department of Agriculture didn't do that. And so essentially the Department of Agriculture left water quality protection largely unaddressed. I mean, there are some things in the regulations that get to water quality a little bit, but not to the same extent the town has in this particular permit. So that's clearly a subject that the Department of Agriculture left alone, and since it left that subject alone, that opened the door for the town to address it in its permit, and the town didn't need to worry about, you know, passing the ordinance before the application was filed and, you know, using the scientific findings of facts, conclusions of law required in 93.90 AR. You know, our position has been that those prerequisites only apply to more stringent standards, because the Department of Agriculture hasn't issued standards on water quality. The siting law is essentially silent on that issue, and because it was silent, the town was free to adopt its own standards in this permit based on the record it had.
So what the town is trying to adopt as standards are what comes out of the two ordinances that were referenced earlier, correct?
Correct.
Where in NR 120 does it talk about nitrogen? That's what I think the town is all concerned about, and I had a little difficulty finding that.
NR 102?
102, thank you,
yeah.
Thank you.
Well, NR 102 talks about surface water quality standards, and there's a section of NR 102 dealing with narrative. It's narrative standards.
Well, you need to cite me to the page, because I looked for nitrogen. I only found phosphorus in 102, and it may well be there, so that's why I need your help.
I wish I could help you, but I don't think I brought that particular regulation with me. But what I can tell you is, I think in the town's findings of fact, it references NR 102,
mm-hmm.
and the narrative water quality standards in NR 102, and the town had received testimony that the pollution that was occurring did violate those narrative water quality standards in NR 102. It's page 71 of the appendix. And
appendix is that, Council?
It would be the Adams appendix.
Pardon me?
The Adams appendix, the one that we submitted, and it's on page 71 of the appendix and finding of fact 50.
When you're talking about finding of fact, you're going back to the town, correct?
Yes.
And you're saying on finding of fact 50, it references what I need to find in NR 102. Am I reading your understanding
yes.
you correctly?
I believe it does. It doesn't provide a specific subsection, but
I see that it references the narrative water quality standards of 102. My concern is lining 102 up with concentrations of nitrogen.
It said the testimony received by the town indicated that the concentrations of nitrogen were in the water in Norwegian Creek were great enough to trigger those narrative water quality standards and violate those narrative water quality standards due to the acute levels of pollution that were occurring.
Right. I read the levels of pollution. I was just trying to square it with 102, but I'll look some more and see if I can find it. You go ahead. I won't take any more of your time.
My apologies.
Oh, I can't find it either.
So you're saying that NR 102, the town references 102, that under 93.92, the department, of course, can promulgate rules, but it did not adopt I don't think, in 5101 cross-reference this 102 at all, right?
Correct.
So what are you pointing to that gives you the authority to enact or adopt or promulgate yourself 102 or rely on? What are you pointing to AR for that? To fill the void. You say you want to fill the void because the department did not adopt or cross-reference in the legislation or rules NR 102. So you're going to come in and save the day. What gives you authority to do that?
A couple of things, Justice Bradley. I don't think, backing up, this isn't, you know, obviously a DNR preemption case, and the DNR, I don't think, has any problem with the town adopting NR 102 and trying to ensure water quality is protected. And so what gives the town particular authority to do that in this case is, yes, DATCAP did not do this. And
they didn't
because,
adopt it.
Mm-hmm. Because they didn't, it's the a water quality standard and a condition addressed to water quality. They're not. It's not a subject that DATCAP regulates. Therefore, the siting law is silent as to that issue. The water quality standard and the condition aren't more stringent than what DATCAP has done. Therefore, it's completely fine to put a condition on the permit that doesn't or that addresses that issue.
And so you talk about it's more stringent or not more stringent. That gets me back to my question. Are you tying into AR then for your authority?
Yes, we are, Justice Bradley. Yes.
Counsel, it seems to me that both the town and your clients articulate well a desire and an interest in a certain enforcement of regulations and standards, more particularly standards relating to water quality. It also seems to me fairly clear that the legislature, in enacting the siting law, expressed a desire for uniformity. In fact, the siting law begins with the statement of purpose that this section is an enactment of statewide concern for the purpose of providing uniform regulation of livestock facilities. And I wonder if those two interests cannot be harmonized by the fact that in addition to the conditional use permit and the added requirements that the town put into it, if other enforcement mechanisms, you mentioned earlier, for instance, the DNR has the duty to promulgate water standards. But I think they also have a duty to enforce those standards through the regulation and other enforcement process, as well as various private rights of action, including nuisance abatement. I wonder if the interests of the state in uniform regulation and the interests of your clients and the town cannot be harmonized through those other enforcement mechanisms.
We find those other enforcement mechanisms to be inadequate. And
why is that?
A couple of reasons. First of all, no one is ever saying that because...
You're not going to take the position that DNR doesn't have enough power, are you?
I think they have the power. Certainly they do, but this isn't a DNR preemption case. So, you know, while the DNR...
But the DNR retains the responsibility for regulation and enforcement.
They certainly do. But they also... The DNR also... And may I finish? I see my time is
yes,
up.
Yes, you may.
The DNR also doesn't have... It acknowledges in its own regulations the town's role to help. And, again, the towns and counties amicus brief explains all of this. The DNR, in its regulations in NR 151, explicitly says it's going to rely on local jurisdictions to do most of the enforcement here, especially and really the DNR is only going to swoop in when the local governments aren't capable of doing it or they ask for help or the DNR thinks they're not doing a good enough job. So that would be my answer is to the DNR enforcement authorities. The DNR is recognizing, as Mr. Reynolds described it, the town is a partner. And so we don't think that the fact that the DNR could also enforce precludes the town from wanting to prevent this up front through a permit condition. The other thing I would say to that as to nuisance is the right to farm law, which we cited in our brief, that's at 823 at .08. It says, you know, we really don't like nuisance actions against agriculture, and there's some changes in agriculture right now that could create conflicts with neighbors. And we would like for you, local governments, to address this through zoning and not through nuisance enforcement. So I think because of that provision in particular, the towns and the citizens' approach best harmonizes all of these differing things and says, no, we're going to try to honor the legislature's directive in the right to farm law to do this up front through zoning. It's really a better result for everybody. You know, it helps us avoid pollution, which once it starts, you know, that it's a problem. You've got to drill a new well. You've got to do a lot of things. And it gives the applicant notice up front of what the town's expectations are in a permit that can be, you know, monitored. And hopefully the town isn't going to, you know, spring a summons and complaint for a nuisance enforcement action on the applicant, and that would be their first notice that there's a problem from the town's perspective.
But it could do that.
I'm sorry?
It could do that.
It could do that. It certainly could do that. But I think from everybody's perspective, it's not desirable. And it's certainly not going to result in uniformity if you have all of these different nuisance enforcement actions across the state with circuit court judges possibly imposing different solutions in different cases.
Well, so that won't promote uniformity, but the different towns and municipalities across the state imposing their own regulations in conditional use permits will.
Well, it gets back to the question of what is meant by uniformity, too. We agree with Mr. Reynolds that the primary purpose of the siting law is to ensure that these facilities go in. Like, it's really, I mean, as many times as I've read the statute, I think that's the best way to read it. It's meant to ensure that these farms happen, and as the circuit court said, they're not simply denied out of hand arbitrarily. People are concerned and have, you know, are fearful of these things. The legislature wanted to make sure that they happen. The siting law, by design, does not ensure uniformity because the siting law is only going to apply to jurisdictions that have adopted a siting ordinance. So already you have two categories of factory farms in the state of Wisconsin, those that are in a jurisdiction that's adopted a siting ordinance, and those that aren't. Thank you.
Thank you, Council. Mr. McLeod, representing Larson Acres.
Madam Chief Justice, members of the court, good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is Eric McLeod, and I represent Larson Acres, which is a sixth-generation dairy farm located in the town of Magnolia in Rock County. Also here in the courtroom with us today are nine members of the Larson family who occupy the first two rows to my left, all of whom work for the family farm in one capacity or another. I will be sharing time with Assistant Attorney General Robert Hunter, who represents the Livestock Facility Siting Review Board. This court should affirm the Court of Appeals' unanimous decision in this matter, as well as the underlying decision of the Livestock Facility Siting Review Board, for two principal reasons that I will address today. First, the siting law preempts local zoning authority and establishes standards and procedures for livestock facility siting and expansion that political subdivisions must follow. Second, the siting law authorizes the Livestock Facility Siting Review Board to reverse a political subdivision's decision to impose conditions where those conditions are not authorized by the standards or procedures contained in the siting law. As we have had some discussion about already this afternoon, the siting law is contained in Section 93.90 of the Wisconsin statutes, which was enacted by the legislature in 2004 with widespread bipartisan support, and it was signed into law by Governor Doyle. The law became effective in 2006 after the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection promulgated the administrative rules contained in ATCP 51. ATCP 51 and 9390 comprise what we refer to as the siting law. It's important to note at the outset what the scope of the siting law's preemption is and what it's not. The siting law concerns zoning.
Interrupt yes. a minute. My understanding of preemption, it's been a while since we've had a preemption case, is that you can have express preemption, right? Legislature says no local legislation here, no nothing. All siting, all regulation is governed by this chapter and chapters, blah, blah, blah. Statute doesn't say that, does it?
What it doesn't say that specifically, okay. Your Honor, but what it does say, as Justice Gableman referred to previously, mm-hmm. is the very first sentence of 9390 mm-hmm. says that this section is an enactment of statewide concern for the purpose of providing uniform regulation of livestock facilities. That language comes directly from Article 11, Section 3, Sub 1 of the Wisconsin Constitution, which states, cities and villages organized pursuant to state law may determine their local affairs and government, subject only to this Constitution, mm-hmm. and to such enactments of the legislature of statewide concern as with uniformity shall affect every city or every village. The method of such determination shall be prescribed by the legislature. And I think the use of that language is a pretty clear indication of what the legislature's intent is with respect to preemption.
So you view this as an express preemption statute?
We do, Your Honor.
But then you have to interpret uniform regulation and what's regulation and what's something else, right?
Fair enough.
Okay.
But it's important to note what the preemption relates to and what it doesn't, because this is a zoning preemption law. It is not a law that preempts all other lawful authority that a town or that the state or any other division of government may enforce.
That's my point. So sub one you read is, this section is an enactment of statewide concern for the purpose of providing uniform zoning regulation of livestock facilities. Is that how you read sub one?
Well, that's what sub one means ultimately when one reads the remaining provisions in the statute, which relate to the preemption of a local municipality's zoning authority.
Okay. So but that's what, in effect, that's what uniform zoning regulation.
That's correct.
All right. And a conditional use is a zoning regulation.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Can the municipality have under 281 that we just talked about regulations relating to water quality?
A town may have regulations related to water quality. Those regulations may not be enforced in the context of a livestock siting permit that is the subject of the siting law. Any such regulation, whether it be related to water quality or any other environmental law or health and safety law that a town may adopt and may have the lawful authority to enforce, must be enforced outside of the siting and permitting process, which is the subject of the siting law.
So they can enforce it, but not in regulation of zoning and not this. So that you're left with nuisance or going to another entity.
Well, that's right, Your Honor. You're left with an enforcement action by either a political subdivision, a town, village, or city, or a county, or the state. And the state has extensive authority to enforce water quality standards as well. This is not a case, as Mr. Reynolds has indicated, where there is absolutely no way for water quality to be protected in the town of Magnolia. Far from it. There are multiple means for that to occur, but what the siting law has said is that is not to be enforced within a siting permit. A siting permit is a separate matter.
Counselor, could the DNR bring an enforcement action against Larson Farms if it received this information that the nitrogen levels were significant?
The DNR certainly could do that if it believed that there was a basis for doing so.
Right. So they are not opted out of authority to enforce the water standards relating to nitrogen.
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. And let me also note that there are other regulatory programs, state programs, that apply to the protection of water quality. One very important one is the WPDES permitting program. And WPDES stands for Wisconsin Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. WPDES permits are issued by the Department of Natural Resources, and that program and those permits are specifically designed to ensure the protection of water quality.
Does your client have a permit under WPDES?
It does, Your Honor. It does have a WPDES permit, and that's provided for under NR 243, which establishes, again, specific water resource protection criteria that a large livestock facility like Larsen Acres must comply with. So it's currently subject, Larsen Acres is currently subject to that whole set of regulations. And what the town has said here is that, well, that's not enough for us. We want to regulate as well. We want to be able to impose those requirements in a permit so we can have more authority. What the legislature has said is Larsen Acres and other large livestock facilities do not have to serve multiple masters on the same issues. What the legislature has said is we're going to establish a uniform set of criteria for the siting of these facilities, compliance with which means that a livestock facility gets a permit and it can operate. It is not exempt, the livestock facility is not exempt from complying with a whole host of other environmental laws. And in fact, that's made clear in ATCP 51, which specifically notes, and let me find that reference, in the application form, I apologize for not finding that reference immediately. It states that local approval. I'm reading, thank you, Your Honor. I'm reading from the official application form that is promulgated as part of ATCP 51.
All right.
And that form, which is part of the regs which govern this case, states local approval of a livestock facility siting application is not based on these laws, except as specifically provided in ATCP 51. And that's not these laws, meaning other environmental laws. However, violations may have other legal consequences. And what DATCAP has said in promulgating ATCP 51 is what the legislature intended, namely, here are the set of standards you need to comply with livestock facility if you are to get a permit and be able to operate. But there are many other environmental standards that may apply to your operation with which you must comply. The failure to comply may result in other legal consequences. And with respect to the state, it may be an enforcement action by the Department of Natural Resources. If the town has authority and has promulgated an ordinance that applies, the town may have authority to engage in an enforcement action against that alleged violation. But as it relates to the permitting of a livestock facility, those other laws do not apply.
Do either of the town's ordinances, the 1977 one or the 2006 one, give that town that kind of authority?
The 1977 ordinance and the 2006 ordinance adopt or purportedly adopt state water quality standards. Mm-hmm. The town has asserted that it has the authority to enforce those rules under its local zoning ordinance. It has not sought to do so in the context of an enforcement action. But if it believes it has that enforcement authority, and it does believe that Larsen has engaged in activity which violates those rules, it can pursue an enforcement action. We're not conceding, A, that there's been any violation of those water quality standards, or B, that there would be a basis for pursuing an enforcement action. We're simply saying that there are other legal mechanisms, whether the town has adopted the appropriate ordinance or not, other legal mechanisms to address those water quality issues.
So what you're saying is they can't condition the permit on those kinds of things out of the ordinance? Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. It cannot include conditions in a permit for a livestock facility that relate to legal standards that are not derived from the siting law or from the procedures that are set forth in the siting law.
What is the difference between monitoring and enforcement?
Well, it depends on the context in which you're dealing with those two issues. Monitoring is something that the siting law specifically allows political subdivisions to do, provided it's monitoring compliance with the standards in the siting siting law. Enforcement, if it relates to the standards that are contained in the siting law, could be revocation of a permit issued pursuant to the siting law, or any number of other enforcement mechanisms the town may choose to take. As it relates to monitoring and enforcement outside of the context of a siting permit, the town has engaged in those monitoring activities already. It's obtained water samples from the nearby creek, and it's alleged that there are elevated nitrate levels in that creek, and it's alleged that Larsen Acres is in some way a cause of that elevated those elevated nitrate levels. It has engaged in monitoring activities already. Enforcement is what we've been discussing a bit already, namely, if it believes that some activity engaged in by Larsen Acres is causing elevated nitrate levels in Norwegian Creek, it can pursue an enforcement action. It can invite the Department of Natural Resources to pursue an enforcement action to address what it believes to be the violation. But under those circumstances, it's the town or it's the Department of Natural Resources, it's the government that bears the burden to establish the basis for that claim. And what the legislature said with respect to the siting law is large ag facilities, they cause a great amount of fear throughout the state of Wisconsin. People are concerned with the contamination and pollution that may result. Okay, the legislature understands that, and it says we're going to strictly regulate these facilities through the siting law. But ultimately, the facilities are going to be presumed innocent, that they're not going to be presumed to be polluting, that if you comply with the siting law standards, you get your permit and you get to keep your permit. If the town believes that Larsen Acres or any other farm in the town of Magnolia, whether it has a siting permit or not, is engaging in an activity which is polluting, it can pursue an enforcement action against that individual, that entity, user of land, but the town bears the burden to prove its claim. It's not a presumption that a farmer, a large livestock facility, is polluting, and the town can unilaterally determine that that's occurring and revoke a permit.
Council, is there any way that a municipality or a town can prevent pollution from occurring before it occurs? Let's just say for whatever reason, you know this is going to cause pollution. What I'm hearing you say is you got to wait until that occurs and then you have to prove that they caused it. Is that how it works, really?
No, there would be other legal, and I don't want to give Mr. Reynolds here a roadmap, but there are certainly other legal mechanisms that could be pursued. One could obtain an injunction, a preliminary injunction, if one believed that there was imminent harm that would result from a particular activity. A nuisance can be abated, but a threatened nuisance can also be the subject of a preliminary injunction. Again, a legal remedy that would be available if the town believed that there were a basis for it. And to date, after all of these years that we've been litigating over this particular issue, the town has not pursued an enforcement action, has not sought an injunction against any activity that Larsen is engaged in. What I think the town is trying to establish is that it has authority to do what the legislature has said it can't, regardless of whether it thinks it could prove in court any type of violation that it's alleging here. Keep in mind that when Mr. Reynolds asserts that the evidence that was developed before the town during the permitting procedure is undisputed, that's just simply not true. The proceeding that was held by the town was a town proceeding. It is not a proceeding in which the rules of evidence apply, in which both parties are given the kind of due process that one would get in court. And if the town is going to allege the kinds of very serious allegations about Larsen Acres, that it's engaging in the type of pollution that the town has alleged. It should go to court and prove those allegations. Instead, we're arguing about whether or not it can include some provisions in a permit, while, according to the town, which we dispute, Larsen Acres is polluting the water.
Councillor, under 3AR, okay, 93A R, what kinds of conditions could be in a conditional use permit that goes along with the permitting by a town?
The only conditions that are allowed, Justice Rogenczak, under 3AE and 3AR are compliance with the standards contained in the siting law, and that's sub 3AE. And 3AR says that a political subdivision may condition approval upon compliance with stricter standards that are properly adopted by the political subdivision. It does not allow any further conditions to be applied beyond compliance with the siting law and compliance with stricter standards which may be properly promulgated by the political subdivision. And it's important to note that as a matter of statutory construction, that's abundantly clear. If the legislature had intended for any and all other legal standards to form the basis for conditions in a livestock siting permit, it wouldn't have included 3AR. It wouldn't have said you may include conditions based on stricter standards properly promulgated, and then left out or anything else that you may come up with. AR would be superfluous. The legislature has clearly indicated its intent that you must condition based on siting standards in the state law, and you may condition based on stricter standards at the local level.
Local level is an ordinance, correct?
It would be the promulgation of an ordinance.
Right, and it has to be passed before the permit application has been filed.
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right.
Isn't it inconsistent with sub 1, which we've just interpreted as for the purpose of providing uniform zoning regulation, to now have AR or A, which now say, oh, you locals can do something that makes you special? It's not uniform.
Is it inconsistent? I would say it reflects a policy decision on the part of the legislature that there will not be strict uniformity throughout the state. It does reflect, Your Honor, the idea that Mr. Reynolds was referring to initially in sub 2, sub B, the considerations that DATCAP was to consider in promulgating ATCP 51, which is to balance the desire for uniformity and recognizing that under certain circumstances there may be local issues which may need to be addressed. And let me...
It's not a total preemption of all local authority.
It's not. And to the point that you made earlier, Chief Justice, the statute doesn't say this shall replace all local authority entirely. What it does is it says the notwithstanding language in sub 3A says notwithstanding the general zoning authority that political subdivisions have, you must be bound by the requirements that are contained in this statute. So what it does is it essentially takes away a town's general zoning authority and then it replaces it with the siting law, which is a full set of requirements and regulations, some of which includes the ability of towns to promulgate individual standards based on unique circumstances at the local level. Does that achieve ultimate uniformity? No, it does not.
Council, I want to look at what local zoning authority is taken away. And you were just at sub 3 of 9390. Referring to looking at that and seeing what's taken away and what isn't. And that is entitled political subdivision authority. Notwithstanding, and then there's a slew of numbers. And the number I want to focus on is the last one on that list, and I want to wait until you're caught up to where
sure.
I am.
Are you
with I'm there,
me now?
Yeah.
Okay. The last one on that list is 9215-3A. So a political subdivision may not disapprove or prohibit a livestock facility siting or expansion unless at least one of the following. So all of these and this litany of numbers in sub 3 are instances of local authority. And sub 3 is say, notwithstanding these, and including 9215-3A, which is the last one and I want to focus on, you can't do it. So, you know, it giveth and it taketh away. In other words, it as you say, it takes it away and then it replaces it with the siting law. It did, although it took away 9215-3A, it didn't take away 9215-2. That's not in the list. And so I'm wondering what your response is to the argument, since it didn't take away 9215-2, it only took away 9215-3A, is 9215-2 still alive and well? It is entitled Local Regulation of Livestock Operations, and sub 2 says a local governmental unit may enact regulation of livestock operation that are consistent with and do not exceed the performance standards, prohibitions, and conservation practices and technical standards under 281.16.3, which deal with non-point sources that are agricultural. So, looks to me by your argument and by the words of 93.90(3) that's a local regulation authority that's not taken away. 3A is taken away, but sub 2 isn't. Can you respond to that, please?
What it means, Your Honor, is that sub 2 is not to be treated as a zoning regulation, that ultimately the town may still have authority outside the scope of the permitting process under sub 2, but it's not something that the legislature regards as a zoning ordinance.
Where do you you need to convince me of that, because as I look at the structure between sub 2 and sub 3A, at least the preface is set up the same way. And so your response is, well, 3A is a zoning authority, 2 isn't. Tell me what authority you have for that premise.
Well, there's a simple reason, Your Honor, and that is because sub 2 talks about standards that are consistent with state law. Sub 3A talks about standards which are more stringent or exceed.
Yeah, but they're both under the heading of local regulations. Mm-hmm. What can local folks do? What can they regulate? They can regulate things in sub 2 that are consistent. They can regulate things in sub 3A that are not necessarily consistent. So I go to 93.90 sub 3 and say, okay, what did they take away? And they took away 3A, but they left 2.
And the fact that it's not expressly referenced, Your Honor, doesn't obviate the fact that the siting law ultimately seeks to establish a set of uniform criteria for the issuance of a permit and the conditioning of that permit.
I grant that, and there is great, great desire and great policy considerations for uniformity. But I understand our chore here in part is, although we understand we want uniformity and it's a desired goal, there are a couple of exceptions. You've said yourself that we're not totally uniform. So we've got to look at the statutes and we've got to look at the rules and say, okay, where are those exceptions? What have they not taken away? What's left? Isn't that what we're about here today, in part anyway?
Well, that's true. I think ultimately you have to read the entire statute, the entire siting law. And the siting law, again, reflects a desire on the part of the legislature to ensure that there is a uniform set of standards. The Department of Ag and Trade and Consumer Protection did not include this standard as part of the siting law requirements in ATCP 51. It may still be within the scope of the town's authority to regulate, again, as with any other environmental law that it may choose to adopt and regulate, but it can't be included as part of the siting permit. And that's made clear by reading the entire statute, the entire purpose from the very first sentence in the statute through the requirements and the limitations on the conditions that can be imposed.
Counselor, when I was reading all of this before coming today, I had thought that 3A was the criteria for outright denying a permit, and that's not where we were. The permit was granted, and so we were under one of those subsections, like either AE or AR more likely, where it was a conditional use permit granting of the permit to operate this facility. Am I right or wrong?
Sub 3A uses the language may not disapprove or prohibit a livestock facility, siting or expansion. But necessarily and logically, that means that unless...
You have to grant it.
Right. Unless certain requirements or certain standards are not satisfied, you must approve. You must approve and you must allow.
But it doesn't deal with situations where the permit obviously didn't meet one of those tests, so there was a permit going to be granted. But the question is it a permit that's granted with a conditional use permit? So don't we look at either AR or AE, and which do you focus on?
Well, ultimately, there's no dispute here that the permit should have been issued. The town recognized that Larson satisfied the requirements,
right,
such that the siting law requirements, such that it could not deny the permit. The related question of what conditions can be included in that permit are referenced in sub AE and sub AR, which we discussed previously. So the statute specifically restricts local authority in the approval process, and that restriction on authority also applies to conditions. There's no requirement that a conditional use permit be issued. A town or a village could issue a license. It could issue some other type of zoning permit that didn't include conditions. What the legislature has said, if you're going to issue a conditional use permit or a special exception permit, which is the same type of permit, you're limited in the types of conditions that you can include. Again, with the idea that if you are conditioning a permit on other standards, ultimately the permittee must comply with those standards, and the failure to comply with those standards could result in the revocation of that permit. And ultimately what that means is denial of that permit through revocation on the basis of standards that are not set forth or referenced in 3A. It would be illogical. It would be an absurd result that a political subdivision could achieve through the imposition of conditions what it acknowledges it cannot achieve in the strict approval
the 3A,
process.
Right. Okay, thank you.
So let's see if I can summarize what I hear, which may not be what you're saying. The state has a statute that wants uniform zoning regulation of livestock facilities. It has, however, under sub 3, including AE and AR, authorized localities to issue conditional use permits. But your position is that the only conditions that they can put in the conditional use permit are those that are explicitly set forth in sub 3. Am I right so far?
In 3AE and 3AR,
right,
relate, 3AE relates to the DATCAF standards, ATCP 51.
Yeah, but
AR relates to any stricter standards that the town may adopt.
The zoning condition, the zoning conditional use standards, right?
Zoning, I'm not following you.
That, because, well, it all involves a conditional use permit. AE involves a conditional use permit?
Correct.
AR involves a conditional use permit, right?
That's correct.
So, okay. And if they're going to do a conditional use permit, they got to fit, the locale has to fit within AE and AR.
That's right? Correct, Your Honor.
Now, if the locality wants to adopt regulations that deal with water, noise, odor, right? Then they can adopt those regulations, right? But they can't enforce them against these large farms that are covered under 93. They can't enforce them in granting or not granting or conditioning a permit. The way to enforce all the regulations that they can do, including the one that Justice Bradley raises in 92.15.3, they got to do that in some other enforcement, like nuisance or something else, but they cannot revoke the permit on the basis of these other good regulations, good in the sense of lawful. Is that essentially what you're telling us, or is my understanding essentially correct?
Well, I think what you've said is what I've been trying to argue. And again,
yeah, that's what my point is, to try and summarize what you said so that I got it.
I think that's right, and I think what you've identified, Chief Justice, is the distinction between the regulations that apply to siting in a permit and other regulations which may be enforced separately outside of the
zoning,
outside of the siting and permitting, and the conditions that are contained in those in those permits.
Does it make good sense? Now, it may be, if the legislature wants that policy, that's fine, and this court should enforce it. When I say enforce it, adopt it and apply it. But, you know, we have to, you read these statutes, you're supposed to say to yourself, look at the text, and when you have, this is a little complicated, I think. Do you?
Well, it does require a fair amount of close attention, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. That sounds complicated to me, but I like your phraseology better. It takes a fair amount of close attention. I'm going to adopt that as mine, and you're going to see it in an opinion I write sometime.
It's all yours, and you can have it without attribution, Your Honor.
I'm not going to footnote you. All right. But you have to look at what's the reasonable policy that the legislature would have intended. Okay.
Thank you.
I understand your argument.
Okay. Thank you.
May I ask?
Justice Brasser.
I'd like to try once more. Condition 3. In the conditional use permit. Why? That's the one that says Larson will allow access for testing well water at the facility and access for the town to test tile lines for water quality monitoring purposes monthly. And then there's more. Why is that unlawful?
Because Larson does not have the obligation to allow the government, here the town of Magnolia, to access its property based solely on the town's insistence. If the town believes, as it has previously, believes that there's some basis for an inspection, just like a warrant in a criminal matter, if the town believes it has a basis to enter onto private property, the Larson Acres farm here, for the purpose of testing well water, because it believes that there's a legal violation that they need to uncover. They can obtain a special inspection warrant from a court, and they've done that in the past. But again, the burden is on the town to establish its right to enter upon private property for this purpose. It's not incumbent upon Larson Acres to allow the government on its property because the government says we're there to determine whether you're in compliance with the law. That should be a notion that would be offensive to all of us if we were looking at this in the context of a criminal law, for example. The government doesn't have the right to enter your home absent reasonable suspicion or probable cause that there is a basis for some criminal violation that's occurring. So condition number three is unlawful under the siting law because there's no basis for allowing the town to access the Larson property for the purpose of well testing to determine compliance with water quality standards. The siting law doesn't allow that, and Larson doesn't have any obligation to permit it. Whether in an individual instance a town and a livestock operation can work a little bit more peacefully and agree that, say, you want to come onto my property and you want to test the well water, fine. But as you can well imagine that in this case over many years, there's a fair amount of suspicion and a fair amount of distrust between the town and Larson Acres that Larson shouldn't have to simply submit to whatever demands the town imposes on it, absent some clear and justifiable legal basis for it.
Or put another way, counsel, is condition three, which Justice Prosser referenced, a more stringent condition than that which is required by the siting law?
That's precisely the case, Your Honor.
Thank you.
My time is up. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. Well, yes, Justice Prosser.
Follow up with what Justice Gableman said. Is condition three something that could be obtained under AR?
Potentially, Your Honor, it could, so long as the specific purpose for sub 3 here was to ensure compliance with a stricter standard that had been properly promulgated by the town. So that if the town had adopted a stricter standard, which it didn't do here, the circuit court agreed that the town had not adopted any stricter standards. Certainly the Court of Appeals agreed with that. If the town had adopted stricter standards and had applied those properly as a condition under sub AR, the town could then impose a condition to ensure compliance with that requirement, monitoring if it involved this type of requirement. Again, this type of monitoring involves compliance with a separate set of legal standards that are not part of the siting law and have never been promulgated by the town as stricter standards.
So if they had an ordinance on water and the ordinance said you've got to have a permit if you're going to deposit X number of tons of manure in a distance from a water body or ground water, that would not be a stricter standard under AR, in your opinion. Is that right? Because there's nothing in the siting law about the water.
It would not be a – I'm not following the question, Your Honor.
Well, the point you keep making, or I hear, is that the town does not have any ordinance or regulation relating to the conditions that it imposed on the conditional use permit. Right?
Correct.
All right. And what I hear Justice Prosser saying is, suppose there was an ordinance that talked about one of these conditions. Can the town enforce it against Larson's?
Within the siting permit?
Hey, at all. If it says they can go on the land, Larson's land, and inspect it or monitor it, can that be enforced?
Again, if the town has an ordinance that imposes certain water quality standards, and the town believes that any farmer, any user of land is in violation of that standard, it can seek a warrant, a special inspection warrant that would allow it to access that property to determine, to gather evidence, to determine if there's a basis for that violation.
Counsel, what I understood you to say in response to Justice Prosser's question didn't go necessarily to the standard of the water quality, but by the method of inspection. And I think in the Chief Justice's last, most recent comment, that's what she was getting at. In other words, if the town had imposed an ordinance, which purportedly, I suppose it would be subject to challenge, but purportedly gave town officials the authority to traverse upon the private property of its citizens any time it, well, under whatever conditions I suppose it chose to adopt. I think the heart of the most recent question is, would that be more stringent or would that be permissible?
I think it would likely be unconstitutional
right,
under the Fourth Amendment.
Right, it'd be challenged on other bases.
So I think that brings you back to your third most recent response, which was to my question, which was, yes, it's a more stringent standard.
And that's the story, and I'm sticking to it, Your Honor.
Good idea, counsel. Thank you very much. Robert Hunter, Assistant Attorney General, representing the State of Wisconsin Livestock Facility Siting Review Board. You've been very patient, Mr. Hunter. You have 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Robert Hunter. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Justice. I'm appearing on behalf of the Livestock Facilities Siting Board. Initially, I was going to indicate that the board desired to make only 2 points. Having heard the arguments, I believe really there's only one we need to make, and that is that relates to deference. This is the first decision rendered by the siting board. Siting board, the statute itself is a new statute. It's the first time it's been construed, the first time the regulations have been reviewed, the first time it's been those regulations have been construed, etc. The department's position, or the board's position, is that its decisions are entitled, its constructions are entitled to due deference from this court, and it's set forth as for the reasons set forth in the brief. And the basis for that is that while the appellants are correct in noting that the courts owe no deference to the boards in construing the limits of its own authority, the board doesn't really assert the contrary here. But deference comes into play here because whether the town's authority is preempted or because the town's issuance of the conditional use permit at issue here and the conditions which the town attaches to the conditional use approval conflict with the board's constructions of the statute. And the board is on the view that those conditions may not lawfully be attached to the permit by the town for the reasons as indicated by Justice Rogensack. The essence is they did not enact an ordinance in a timely fashion. They failed to do so. Provision Section 3AR, 9393AR, specifically provides a methodology by which a municipality may, if it desires to do so, engage in more stringent requirements, may place more stringent requirements upon a facility. However, what must be recalled here is that the more stringent conditions that we're talking about are the ones which the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection has enumerated in pursuant to 9392A. Those enumerated, or those in 9392A, the statute legislature has enumerated the powers and the various regulations that are in existence, which the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection may select from.
Counsel, because of your limited time, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to skip ahead a little bit and ask about enforcement.
Yes,
would the Department of Natural Resources be handicapped in its ability to enforce its regulations if it were not for the 7 conditions which the town adopted here?
No, Your Honor, the conditions do not. Department of Natural Resources can do as it is required to do under its own authority. It has no, the conditions attached by the town really are neither here nor there with regard to the Department of Natural Resources. The department could obtain information from the town, but the Department of Natural Resources is fully able
to. It could do that anyway, I suppose.
It could do it in any event. If there are no further questions, then I guess I can sit down. Thank you.
I want to get you. I just had to finish typing. I can type pretty fast, but not all.
Let's move faster next time.
I know. You have to be quick around here. I asked the town's attorney a little bit about this, and we chatted a little bit about the 2006 ordinance. So that's what I want you to focus on.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is it the board's position that the application was complete on May 2nd when it was initially filed?
Your Honor, I believe the question is whether, under the statute, as I recall correctly, whether the ordinance was adopted prior to the filing of the application.
Okay, is the filing complete then? I think it's the position of the town that though it was filed on May 2nd, because they asked for other information to be added to the application, that it really wasn't deemed filed until after the ordinance was enacted in 2006. And that's what I want to talk with you about. What is the board's position on the validity of these two acts and how they fit together?
My understanding, Your Honor, is that the board, and it would, of course, defer to the decision issued by the board. But my understanding is the board determined that the date was filed was when the application was filed, and that the ordinance adopted by the municipality was essentially a day late and a dollar short. Number one, it wasn't late in time, and number two, it did not have, as I recall, the determination was it didn't have the. There was not a specific scientific basis adopted by the town to support its own determinations. So that was essentially the long and short of it.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. The town adopted an ordinance in 1977, as I understand it?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that was clearly before the application?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why doesn't that apply?
That ordinance would apply, Your Honor, with regard to the general sort of effluvium of the universe. But with respect to this particular statute, what we're talking about are the specific standards, which are conditions, essentially, that the town is attaching to this particular application and its approval. In order to authorize the town to enact and to apply those standards in the context of this approval of a siting facility. Now, you have to, my concept of what the legislature did here, or what the legislature and the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection did, was essentially to say, you've got siting, and you've got regulation. You've got, you know, operation on this side with regulation, and that's what happens. But siting goes this way, and regulation in terms of the operation, pollution, and stuff like that, that's on this track over here. There are two separate tracks. Siting goes ahead without regard to operative concerns, unless under AR there is the town or the municipality enacts regulations and ordinances in a timely fashion based upon specific incidental criteria. Bless you. That didn't happen here. That's why, even though the town had issued, had adopted an ordinance back in 1977, for the purposes of the siting criteria, that ordinance is non-existent. It doesn't apply. It's not invoked within the context of this specific action.
So what does siting give the applicant the ability to build structures or and bring in 500 animals, 200, whatever 1,000. It is.
Well, yes. Yeah. Yes, Your Honor.
So the department says you can cite it. It means come on in, put the animals in, and whatever you need, right? Barns
That's
or
interesting. Yes, Your Honor.
Equipment. Okay. And then if it doesn't operate well, when I say well, if it operates in violation of town ordinances relating to what I will generalize as nuisance or other issues,
yes, Your Honor.
Then the town has to deal with it under those ordinances, but the establishment is there.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that what
yes, Your Honor.
The concept of this is?
I believe that's the concept. And the essence of it is that the Department of Natural Resources, as well as the town itself, sure. can take action to do whatever needs to be done.
Yeah, or the Department of Revenue or the IRS, they all can do their thing, but it's there. It's
I don't
cited.
Want to get into the IRS, Your Honor. Not my bailiwick right now.
Okay.
No further questions?
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
2.5 minutes is going to pass quickly, Counsel.
Just quickly, Justice Rogensaug asked about nitrogen, and I just wanted to point out that there is only a narrative standard on nitrogen, but the nitrogen-specific number is for drinking water. That's 5 milligrams, 5 parts per million.
Can you tell me where in Chapter 102 you see that? What's the number?
It's in the groundwater standard. I don't have it, but the state adopted groundwater standards of...
I have no doubt that the state has a standard for nitrogen and that you relate it to us correctly in your brief. My concern was finding it within the confines of 102. That's all.
102. It does. It's only a narrative standard.
Find it, right.
It's only a narrative standard.
Does narrative standard mean?
Counsel,
that
I didn't have the opportunity before your red light went on the first time to ask this. The one thing that's been on my mind since I read your brief is something that's on page 11, and in it you wrote under the siting law. The town had the option of adopting, quote, more stringent standards, end quote, than the technical standards adopted by DATCAP in its rules. It could have, for instance, insisted on greater setbacks, prohibited fall spreading of manure near tile lines, or made other changes to NRCS 590 nutrient management standard contained in ATCAP 51. Instead, the town chose to rely on the state water quality. When I read that, the thought came to my mind, I wondered if that was the product of a deliberate decision-making process, a deliberative process, where the town considered adopting more stringent standards at a meeting or perhaps by the exchange of memorandum, but then said, no, we're not going to adopt those more stringent standards because we already have them.
That's an excellent question. And basically, the only standard that they would have been contemplating be more stringent is the nutrient management standard, which is attached as Exhibit B under Rule 51. This was what the town was concerned about. And this rule basically deals with technical standards, how the farmer is supposed to operate this factory farm. It deals with when manure is spread, how far back from tile lines, how far back from waterways. The town convened and basically said, look, in order for us to refigure this rule that the state has worked on for years is going to be way too complicated. We have way too many diverse wetlands and soils in this area. All we are going to do is hold the farmer accountable for performance. In other words, these technical standards, and in it, Justice Gableman, it says in the text of it, this standard does not contain the text of federal, state, or local laws. Implementation of this standard may not eliminate nutrient losses that could result in a violation of law.
So that choice or that decision was made at a meeting of the town board?
Yes. In general, they decided in adopting their ordinance they were going to rely.
In general is different from when did the decision take place?
Well, the decision took place when it was a long process of going through this ordinance. So first that the town adopted adopted the standards for citing, and that is for basically saying we're going to follow the DATCAP rule.
If you can't answer, you can just say I can't answer, because at page 11 it says the town chose to rely, and I'm just wondering when that decision was made.
Well,
if you don't know, that's fine.
The final decision was in 2006 when they, you know, after a period of debate, they said we are going to hold the farmer accountable for performance. And that is not a more technical standard, because a technical standard is how you do it. A performance standard is whether it succeeds. And a performance standard, which is embodied in the water quality standards of the state, okay, is the ultimate.
Are you referring to the meeting before or after the filing of the application?
This was the town had until November 2006 to adopt an ordinance.
And you take that position because?
Well, they did. I mean, so the way the livestock siding.
Oh, right. I was referring to the more stringent standards requirement having to do with which we've talked about or which has been discussed before.
Right.
About the prior to the filing of the application.
Yes, and these are not more stringent standards. More stringent standards are setbacks and amount of manure and things of a technical nature. Performance standards are whether it works, and that's the most important thing. Monitoring, for instance, is actually in the ordinance.
Okay.
All
I was asking, counsel, and if I haven't made myself clear, all I was asking for really was a date, and a date of when that decision was made. If you don't know, you don't know. That's
ultimately, the date would have been made when they enacted the ordinance. Ultimately, because the ordinance basically said we're relying on performance standards.
Okay.
Thank you. That's good.
I think my time is up.
That's all right. I told you to go fast.
He told you it would go fast.
Right. Ms. Westberg, you've got 2.5.
Thank you, Chief Justice Abrahamson. I found in our 102, I did have it. It is in our 102.04 where the narrative standards are. And getting to the Chief Justice's question before, a narrative standard is basically a standard that doesn't have a particular number. It says you shall not do X if it results in Y. And the narrative standard the town was concerned about here, I think, the most and got the testimony about during the hearing was in our 102.04 sub 1 sub D that says substances in concentration or combination which are toxic or harmful to humans shall not be present and amounts to be of public health significance and shouldn't be acutely harmful to animals, plants. And the testimony during the hearing reflected that there were levels of nitrogen in the water that were acutely harmful to aquatic organisms.
Okay. All right. I understand what you meant. Thank you very much for looking it up. I appreciate it.
Sure. I want to emphasize that, you know, getting to uniformity, the siting law will always apply to the subjects that DATCAP, the Department of Agriculture, chooses to regulate. We're not messing with that kind of uniformity. And the subjects, there's only been five so far. They're in ATCP 51 and its structures, odor, nutrient management, runoff from typically mostly feedlots, and manure storage structures like the design of the waste lagoons and the tanks. That's all fine. But everything else is not going to be a more stringent standard, and then it's up to the town to use and fall back on their typical zoning authority to regulate things that have nothing to do with all of that. Your garden variety zoning issues like noise, traffic, vibration, lights, and in this case, water quality. That's not more strict, and it's not superfluous for, in 3AR, there to be a rubric of how standards that are more strict than what DATCAP has set forth for that process to be specified and not have a process for all of these other issues that towns have always had authority to regulate under their ordinances. I want to get to the question about the DNR. The Council for Larson indicated that, you know, there are the WPDES permits that will also regulate the operation of these facilities, but there are gaps in that type of regulation. The Lakes and Rivers amicus brief explains some of those gaps, but basically those permits are only going to apply to certain livestock facilities, those of 1,000 or more animal units, so everything below that isn't going to be regulated by DNR unless it's been shown that there's been a direct discharge to waters of the state.
But this facility is regulated. I thought I asked if they had a permit, and I was told they did.
Well, they are now. They only got it last year, Justice Robinsack. They had applied in 2003, and the permit wasn't issued until 2010. I'm not saying that's their fault, but for a variety of reasons, there was a seven-year gap where the town was the only permitting authority, the only game in town. And I see my time is up.
Yes. Any questions? Thank you, counsel. I want to thank all the counsel, Mr. Reynolds, Ms. Westerberg, Mr. McLeod, and Mr. Hunter for their excellent arguments in dealing with a statute that requires close attention. That concludes our argument today on 09-AP-608, John Adams et al. Versus State of Wisconsin. The court will meet in closed session at 3:45, and the court is in recess until we have a closed conference and oral argument next week. We are in recess. Thank you.